Who's got the biggest, the cleanest, the coldest whips of all?
Buzz!
Can you dig it? Who's never late and never missed a single call?
Buzz!
Right on time. Who is the man when you need a chauffeur in Duval?
Buzz!
Damn right. Now listen, when you need a ride to the airport, the bar, a wedding, or anywhere in between, call the man we all know as Mr. Pay-Per-View.
Buzz!
904-887-0763.
Hey, Eric, take that goddamn roll tie shirt off.
Love you guys, Duval County.
Let's go.
We are joined by the only three-time Bold Take guest, John Shipley. What's up, brother?
Three times.
Can you believe it?
I can't. It feels like the first time.
Three.
That's right. Welcome, Mr. Shipley.
Hey, how you guys doing, man? Thanks for having me on again, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. You want to give everybody your credentials, where they can find you?
Yeah, sure. You can go ahead and follow the site on Twitter at Jaguar Report. Can't promise the links will always work, evidently, because it seems like only about half of them work today, but most of the time they should. And you can find me on Twitter. It's at @John_Shipley. I'm aware more than one underscores are psychopaths, but there's literally another sports writer named John Shipley, and he's got like 80 years of seniority over me, so that I can do about that one.
Dilly,
you might know him. He's Minnesota, I think.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, there you go, yeah.
Well, Shipley, again, thank you for coming on with us for the third time. I just want, you know, even though your links maybe don't work, you still have a higher winning percentage than ShotKon, so I just want you to know that. So that's why you're still welcome around here.
I appreciate that. I mean, you're not really counting all of my games, evidently, because I'm pretty sure it'd be much lower, but I appreciate it.
Oh, you're just being modest, Mr. Shipley. You're just being modest. So since we've got, you know, we decided, A, we don't get paid to follow this team for a living, and the three of us are about at our wit's end at this point in this freaking hellish season. Especially with all the other stuff going on the periphery. So we figured we'd have Mr. Shipley on here today and, you know, jump into some of the more juicy topics at hand, right?
So there was some minor news that happened this week.
Yeah, a couple few things.
Just a couple. Yeah,
Mike Glennon lost the game by 2 points.
Yeah.
Right. Shout out J-Nubs.
NFL football game.
Shout out J-Nubs. Almost brought home the W.
No, yeah, I mean, it's amazing because it's like – as many like Jaguars losses as I've covered in the last 2 years, I've never seen like a game get talked about less than that one. Just because Caldwell getting fired afterward, everybody's like, all right, to hell with that 60-minute game we just watched.
They find new ways to like forget about that the game even happened every week.
And honestly, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, why don't we start there then, since we've got some other juicy stuff to get to. Why don't we start with the whole Glennon and Minshew thing? Minshew is healthy. He's throwing balls in practice, and they decided not forget that we're going with Glennon instead.
Yeah, no, I wrote yesterday that it kind of reminds me, like it's not verbatim the same thing as the Nick Foles situation, because Foles obviously got hurt, you know, first quarter of the season, but both of them basically getting benched in week 13, and with both of them. The way I see it was last year at Foles, once you benched him at halftime for Minshew, you could never again like sell him on the locker room or the fan base or even the ownership, anybody as him as the guy if you're going to bench him for a 6-round rookie. And same thing with Gardner, man. If you're going to bench him for Mike Glennon, no matter how competent he might have looked last week, like you can't sell him as the guy to anybody. So it was probably already like obvious that they were going to pick a quarterback with their first pick. But to me, starting a Mike Glennon over a healthy Minshew, I mean, that locked it up to me.
And at the same time, like, he looked relatively competent, way more competent than I thought he was going to look on Sunday. Yeah.
I think that's when Doug said that, when Marone said that he gave them the best chance to win, at first I was like, I don't know. And then I thought about it, and I was like, you know, he might actually be right, and I think that's the problem, you know?
Right,
like,
yeah.
If Glennon gives them the best chance to win in 2020, what are you doing here?
Yeah, that's how damning – I mean, I really think you come away from that game, he made a couple of throws, right? Right, John? Like, he made a couple of throws that we haven't really seen. I mean, missed a few, too, that probably, yeah, thankfully, that would have turned that game, you know, in a completely different direction that we
like
didn't want
to. Like a win that we don't want.
Yeah. Let's not get crazy around here. But, you know, he made a couple of throws that were like, oh, those are good throws. And it wasn't like they were Aaron Rodgers – Pat Mahomes amazing throws.
They're just normal NFL passes, you know?
Yeah. And it's just been so long since we've seen that.
Which looks like trapeze artist work to us or some shit.
Yeah.
Legit. No, I mean, seriously, the standard of quarterback play in Jacksonville, I mean, the when / if they get a quarterback that's even above average, it's going to look like something that, you know, Jacksonville hasn't seen in over a decade. Because, I mean, just before Glennon, the five quarterbacks before him were, you know, Bortles, Kessler, Foles, Minshew, and Luton. And I'm not sure those guys start on any other team in the league. Like, even the Jets – I think the Jets would probably start Flacco over most of those guys, except maybe Minshew. And that's maybe.
Do any of those guys even start for Alabama?
I know who they don't start for, the University of Florida, baby, Traskinville.
None of them start for the Jaguars. I'm going to guess that.
Hey, Sally. Yeah. Just want to let you know we heard what you said. Just shut the fuck up and don't ever say it again, okay?
Woof. Okay. Do we want to do our MVT against the Browns, or you want to save that?
Let's just get wild with it right now.
Yeah, what's MVT? When I first saw it, I thought, is that the Mary kill? But that didn't make sense.
No, we're not going to make you do that again, John. Don't worry.
I'm not going to answer again. Don't worry.
you might have to skip this one maybe, but MVT is the most valuable tanker of the game. So
I'm not doing that.
It's basically the player that contributed the most to the loss, which is a good thing for us because we want the loss.
Yeah. Which is why we're celebrating it.
John, all right, hold on a second here. I'm not going to pressure you into answering, giving us your MVT. But I will just
David
say –
Brian.
There we go. All right. I would think it would be refreshing, John. I would think it would be refreshing if somebody within the media just started embracing the tank completely and openly like we are, right? Like, writing with that kind of slant and that angle, I feel like we're talking page views, lots of clicks for you, John. I'm just trying to help you out.
When I work the gears in my head, you're not wrong, but then again, I'm not positive people aren't already behind it. I'll be honest, I think there's like a few like stragglers who aren't like thinking, okay, it's probably the best for them to lose. But I remember when the Jets played the Patriots on Monday Night Football for some god awful reason that it seemed like half the Jags beat was tweeting like excited that the Jets might win the game.
Yeah.
That's true. You're right.
I think this is where Jordan DeLugo comes in with the fan / reporter angle. He can openly root for the tank, right? All right, moving on. So my MVT for the Browns game is going to be – all right, so follow me on this one because I wanted to take a different one even though I'm going first. What's the reason that they went for – refresh my memory. What's the reason they went for the first two-point conversion?
Because the analytics said to.
So it's because of the analytics. Okay, so my MVT is going to be Tony Khan. Tony Khan and his analytics caused Doug Marone to go for that two-point conversion. And if they had just kicked the extra point, they would have tied the game at the end with the second extra point.
Doug Marone Doug Marrone apologist.
So I'm going with Tony Khan.
Steven Soliday.
MVT, so, final answer.
Listen, this shouldn't even be a segment on this show. We've already determined it. The people have voted. The votes have been tallied, right? It's Doug Marrone. Because the analytics are one thing. Having a team where you're trotting out Mike fucking Glennon in the year 2020 and you take points off the board and you end up losing the game because of that, right? Or at least not tying the game because of that. You're the MVT. Like, he made the decision. The analytics can be what they are, but he actually took the analytics, looked at the analytics around Mike Glennon's neck, right? And then made the decision to go for it. He is the MVT. There's no, it is.
It's worse when you think about, like, that first one, they actually made the point after, and then they found out, oh, there's a flag. We can't go for two. So the point was literally on the scoreboard.
It was he literally reached up and took it off. I don't know if you really want to enter somebody else into the conversation for consideration. But.
Yeah, no, I have a good one. I think Devon Hamilton, he made a whole scene, acted like his knee had been blown to shit with like a mortar. All to find out it's not like that serious and he's not going to play for the rest of the year. So we have some, you know, garbage man in the middle. And I really respect that as we move forward into the end of the season. Let's just get all the good players on the, you know, on the defense out of the way so we can keep steamrolling to these L's.
Yeah. Okay.
I completed my mission of keeping Doug Marrone off the MVT for like 5 weeks. So I'm proud.
Well, I almost think we need to have an end of season MVT. MVT team, right? I think we've talked about that. But I think people like Devon Hamilton, maybe they belong on there in a more
prestigious manner.
Well, yeah, but a season-long award, if you will, right?
Right.
I mean, whereas for the one individual game and the outcome of such – you got to go Doug Marrone. That's all I'm saying. You got
to
go Doug.
I'm kind of to your point. I'm keeping like everyone that we've said, I'm keeping in a list. So that way I can put the team together at the end of the year.
Yes. And we'll send all of them a thank you card.
Yeah.
I just want to say, it's really funny. And it's not the first year it's happened, because we've had years where we had like 20 plus players on the IR, but for the last, I don't know, probably 3 home games, there's someone playing on meaningful downs and I have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
And sure. There was some guy, like, I think he was wearing number 40, which was another guy I didn't know named Brandon Watson's number before he was maybe out of the way. And then there was another number 40. And
yeah, it's a new 40 now. Yep.
Yeah, and he's the one who, like, missed a tackle at the end of the game that allowed him to get the first down and run the clock out.
It's the same guy. He changed his name.
Oh, what?
Yeah. His name's Brandon.
Breaking news. Breaking news on the pod.
It was like 2 weeks ago.
What was his old name and what's his new name?
It's Brandon Watson,
and it's like Brandon. You'll have to Google it. I'll butcher it. But
okay,
it,
that's
it,
a, fair enough.
It was the same guy.
So the question is: Is he a real Jag or a fake Jag?
Bro, so I was just concerned. I was like, you're going to tell me they found two guys that have the same identical build and they're both going to wear the same number and they're both just as bad.
And they're both not guys that you've ever heard of before.
Yeah. And I just assumed that it was new. I had no idea what his first name was. I was like, oh, look, here's some little guy running onto the field.
So a couple things about what you just said. One, who would have thought that real Jag, fake Jag would have continued past like the training camp that had no preseason where we got those, see nobody play. Number one, who would have thought that would have gone on through the whole year? Number two, Dylan, you just said something and you kind of just jumped right through it. And you almost said there's been years like this before, when in reality, it's been every year other than 2017. Every year other than 2017, there's been the mad rush to throw everybody, okay, oh, you've got a hangnail, you're on IR. Okay. You've got a stomachache?
Yeah.
IR you go.
Yeah. How terrible is that to be like, hey, you know, like when we get to the point of every year where we have players playing that we don't know who they are? Go Jags.
Yep. And we're just stashing all those guys for next year.
Yeah, every year it's for next year, but this year we're gonna get a quarterback.
So maybe. this is a good segue.
I like segues.
For
like the ones that you ride around with the gyro in them.
Sure, both.
What we actually wanted to bring Shipley on to talk about, which is the guy who picks all these people,
Tony Khan.
God.
And how he doesn't have a job anymore.
Has Tony Khan ever had a job?
Our words, not Shipley's.
So Dave Caldwell's fired on Sunday.
What? Afternoon. What?
And
who? Yeah,
Dave Caldwell was fired.
Breaking news. The funny thing about Dave Caldwell being fired was there were so many people celebrating, which I get, but there were people who were like, oh, thank God it actually happened. Like, did you really think that that was not going to happen? Like, there's people that legitimately thought this dude was going to be back again next year.
I did.
Explain that to me.
What's there to not, like, he should have been fired fucking 5 years ago and every year since.
I was going to say, for all the seasons that he probably deserved to get fired, I'm not sure this is, like, top two.
Exactly. And that's kind of why, like,
that's a fair point. That's a fair point I didn't really think of.
And that's kind of where I'm at. Like, at what point do we just accept, like, he's like the leech, like, on your gooch that you don't know is there until, like, you know, the third day of the trip and it's so big that that's when you know to pull it off?
What? You're on your own there, buddy. You sound like you had a tough experience one vacation.
I should have used the word tick, but I couldn't find it, and I went leech. So here we are.
So, given that, what would you – what was – I know, Shipley, you wrote about this. So, give us what your overarching takeaways from his tenure as
Yeah, no, I mean, when you're general manager for almost eight seasons, it's kind of hard to unpack everything. But, I mean, you just look at the last decade of the Jaguars, and for the most part, I mean, you know, in the NFL, your record is what it is. So, for all the people that want to say, you know, he was underrated or some context is needed, that doesn't work. You know, I mean, the NFL, your record is what it is. And seven seasons or double-digit losses in 8 years. And even if you want to make the argument that, you know, you can't count the Tom Coughlin years because of the influence Coughlin had, which I understand, well, then you're not counting his only good season as general manager. You know, so it's just – from the start, there were kind of problems, and I think once Jokel and Bortles were his first two picks, and they kind of immediately looked like they didn't belong in the NFL, because Luke wasn't even good before he got hurt. I remember him playing right tackle. It looked like the quarter I played right tackle at Oak Leaf JV. I mean, it was when your top two picks just don't look like NFL players, and then your number three pick at defensive end is automatically worse than your third rounder. It just wasn't ever going to work out. And people like to say, you know, he found guys like Brandon Linder, he found Devon Hamilton. That's awesome. You know, finding those third round, fourth round guys, that's great. But whiffing in the first round, whiffing on free agents, and most importantly, whiffing on quarterbacks, that's just something you can't really come back from. And I think that's going to be his legacy, especially not finding a quarterback, because, I mean, the Jaguars are in the same spot they were in 2013 and even before that, because he was never able to find a quarterback.
The quarterback and the first round pick, those are the two things that jump out.
Yeah. And people like will say, like, well, who else were you going to pick other than Bortles? I mean, two of the three quarterbacks picked after him are still starting in the NFL today. Meanwhile, he's the Broncos' quarantined quarterback who isn't even on their active roster most of the time. He's on the practice squad 6 years after being signed. I mean, 6 years after being drafted as the number three pick. That's incredible to me. I've never seen anything like that.
Well,
and he's
one.
Only on a practice squad because of COVID.
Okay.
Now he was on the practice squad before then.
No. He's saying the only reason that the practice squad has opened up to people like him is because of the COVID season, basically.
Jesus, that's even worse.
Well, and here's the part that's even more sad, which I'm sorry that I'm about to break this to the two UCF alums on this podcast with me right now. But Shipley, you said he's the quarantine quarterback and he couldn't even do that right. So
I didn't say that. I'm just saying.
No, I said that. You said he was the quarantine quarterback. I'm the one who's saying it. He couldn't even do that right. So that's how fucking bad that pick was.
If you've ever – I'll say this as one of the UCF alums here. If you've ever been to UCF, you could have saw that coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I remember one time on campus, somebody was, like, wearing a Bortles jersey, and it was, like, right at the end of 2016 season, and somebody, like, called out to him, like, hey, nice shirt, and he looks at it, and he's like, nah, man, it freaking sucks. like, you're wearing it.
Nice. Well, I know, Sally, we're going to get into some more GM talk as far as Caldwell, but as far as the future, kind of what Shipley sees there. I mean, is there anything else to say about Caldwell at this point? I mean, Dilla.
Good riddance. Hope you land on your feet.
I wanted to float a take I had a few days ago to three of you guys and get your reactions. Solly, like you made a good point that like the chance of, you know, them playing 4D chess and predicting that the season would go this bad and that things would end up like so well for them to be a desirable spot. I agree with that completely. And I have no idea if it was their intent to kind of keep them while the year sucked and then get actual good candidates the next year. But for the first time, I mean, I joke about this with Eric Stoner. It seems like most of the time when they do things right, it's by accident. And I really think that's this again, because I firmly believe if they had those jobs open up last year, they get the worst possible candidates. I mean, like 2013, when they interviewed Dave Caldwell and Steve Keim, who's the Cardinals GM, who's terrible. I really think they would have just gotten awful candidates. So in hindsight, I blasted them last year for not firing Caldwell and Marrone, but now I'm like, all right, it was probably for the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And go ahead. I was going to say, like, I could see a world where it was done intentionally. Like, you've set yourself up with the picks. Now all you got to do is tank to get one of these quarterbacks who looks like we're going to have a nice class of quarterbacks. And, you know, you've got some young pieces at least. Like you said earlier in this call that, you know, they're actually in the same spot as 2013. And I don't know if I completely agree.
I meant in terms of having awful quarterbacks. In terms of job being desirable, no, it's way better.
That and like even just like the pieces that are on the roster, I feel like in 2013 it was like Dillard was lined up at, you know, defensive end.
Yeah,
it was fucking terrible then. You can't even compare. Shipley wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, 2013 was legit like expansion level roster.
Right. Yeah. Definitely.
I don't think you can give them anywhere near the credit that we're almost sort of attempting to potentially. I think that to what Shipley just said, they're lucking into it. Like that's what, and frankly, it's what a lot of us have been saying for the past decade almost. Like you gotta go rock bottom. You gotta go rock bottom at a certain point. We never have. For a franchise that over the last 15 years has been so putrid in almost every one of those seasons, we've never gone rock bottom. And I know that it's not a guarantee that you're going to nail the franchise quarterback just because you go rock bottom. Because there's been lots of teams that have done it multiple times in the last decade or 15 years and didn't land their guy potentially.
Browns.
I will forever advocate just based off of like mathematics that you're better off having your pick of all the players and then you potentially fucking up by picking the wrong one than you are by having less of a pool to pick from, right? Like, so if you're going to be bad, be fucking bad. Now, that kind of leads me into the conversation about the future GM. And I've had probably no less than a half dozen, 10 people on the Twitter machine ask me when I kind of gave my commentary on Caldwell and the whole situation, like, well, Cap, who do you think we're going to get? Who do you want? Who's on your wish list for GMs? And I've started to look at some of these guys, but Shipley, I kind of wanted to get your take on this. I don't know how much that those fucking people really matter, other than other than, I'm talking about GMs in the NFL, other than can they pick the right quarterback out of the three or four that are usually available most years? Can they make that pick? Because to me, you can be a really good evaluator of talent. You can have a good plan to build a franchise and build a team and an organization. But if you don't land the guy in your first or second year and you get the wrong guy, none of the other stuff matters as much.
That's the game for most of them.
Yeah. I mean, we just saw that play out. I mean, you know, for all the good that did picking guys like Allen Robinson and Brandon Linder and that one Florida State linebacker, I'm not going to fully mention, like, you know, that good kind of gets negated when you completely whiff on the quarterback position. So I'm with you completely. And I think a good example is like Houston, you know, a complete horribly coached team, horribly managed team with Bill O'Brien, but they were still going to the playoffs like every year because Deshaun Watson is, you know, one of the NFL's best quarterbacks. So you hitting the quarterback and everything else, it matters a lot less.
Right. And two, I think it goes back to like what Cap was saying about with Jackson, the reading and writing, it's the communication too as a GM. Like, does the GM relate it all to the players? Like, if I'm going to call you in to my office and say, hey, man, you're the bubble linebacker, and if you want to make this team, you need to play better, am I going to have a positive reception communication with you? Or is there just a complete disconnect when you're like, man, this fucking nerdy guy has never done this in his life. Like, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
I think that's important. But, like, Bill Belichick isn't coddling or high-fiving anybody, but he had Tom Brady. So he was able to build that. You know,
the quarterback is the end all be all, but on the way in between, like, even when you're developing the young guy who's not like necessarily a top five quarterback, and it's just the way that they get across to the players in New England. They get across to the players by being uber competitive and uber like straight to the point on everything. It's football, 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 not fun. You know what I mean? And the players respond to it up there because that's the culture that they've got going, but that's top to bottom. And I mean, it is Belichick who's doing it all up there. So I think that's a little different, too, because it's the coach who's building the roster, and we're not going to have that in Jacksonville.
I think it's important to build that kind of, you know, not just communication, but that kind of culture. And I think a big thing, you know, with the Patriots and all these other good teams, they're from the coaching staff to the people in the field to the front office, it always seems like they're kind of, you know, rowing and working in the same direction. And I think that's one thing you can say the Jaguars, you know, under Caldwell, it just seemed like they were all over the place. You know, I mean, it just seemed like they were either unorganized, they didn't have a plan, or, you know, the team just didn't gel together. And I think that's a big reason why things came crashing down as hard as they did in the locker room. You know, I mean, because they're really just throwing guys and personalities together that just did not mesh.
Well, I think so all of this talks about the identity, and that's what you're kind of talking about too, right? Like, what is the identity of the team? And I think it goes even deeper than that. I really think, you know, the good organizations that have staying power, that have, you know, a long track record of some success, the organization itself has a culture, has an identity. Right. I mean, you look at the Steelers, you talk about the.
Exactly.
So for me, my answer the other day was like this. Look, find me the best GM. I don't know who it is. We're all going to have our favorites. And it's always so funny to me when it comes to GMs, because like most of us that are shooting the shit about this stuff, we don't fucking know. We don't.
And so, who a good GM is, like, to your point? Like, if they hit on a quarterback, they're a good GM. If they don't hit on a quarterback, they're not a good GM.
Right. So, for me, and I'm sure we can kind of all go around the horn here and talk about some of the – and Shipley, we'd like to get your take on some of the guys that are likely going to be in the running for a lot of these openings. But for me, I look at it and I'm like, you know what? Get me a guy who – is from an organization that has that identity, that has an established identity, that has a track record, and that is a place where the people who that guy works with at that organization, a lot of those people don't leave. They don't leave unless they're getting that, like, you know, big time promotion. So from director of player personnel or whatever to GM, like they don't leave. And there's not very many of those around the league. The Ravens to me are the one that obviously, you know, comes to mind. And if I could build a team with uncertainty at quarterback, which is what we have, even though we might have a top two pick, if I could build a team, an organization, I'd be hard pressed to find one from a front office perspective on down that I wouldn't want them to, that I'd want them to be more like than the Ravens. So,
I mean, yeah, my fault.
No, go ahead, Dale.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, if you're saying you kind of want to model the Ravens, when we keep Trent Baalke in and he hires Harbaugh, I mean, it's probably as close as you're going to get to as, you know, Harbaugh's brother right here in town.
Go back to drinking your cranberry juice, you asshole.
Before you talk about this, Shipley, another caveat that I just kind of occurred to me is that no matter who we hire as a GM this offseason, he could – like almost automatically be looked at as a good GM if we end up with a top two pick and both of those two quarterbacks are actually end up being good.
Yeah. No,
like that could that alone could buy him like lots of years.
The general manager that drafts the franchise quarterback in Jacksonville, I mean, Caldwell got 8 years for drafting probably one of the worst quarterbacks this franchise has ever started. I mean, inarguably the worst long-term starter they've ever had. I mean, what's a guy who drafts a good quarterback going to get? I mean, I'd say, man, I don't even know. Key to the City, a key to the Kismet. Like, no, I think whenever they do find that guy.
A key to St. Louis.
You asshole. I'll tell you what, John. It doesn't even have to be a franchise quarterback. Just draft a quarterback who has us competitive in like around 500 or slightly better most years for the next few, and that guy can stay for 20 years.
He can stay Wilson.
For 20 years. Whoever it is, they can stay for fucking 20. They sign up. You know what? The second that quarterback proves that they're decent, give the guy a 20-year fucking contract. I'm in.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like it's at the point where, you know, like I mentioned earlier, their quarterbacks have been so bad lately that I think if they got like a Jared Goff type quarterback, like he'd be seen as, you know, a bit of, I don't want to say superstar around here because I know Jacksonville fans have much better standards than that. But just once they get an actual quarterback, I think it would just be the team will be seen a lot differently by the people inside and outside.
So tell us about some of the, first of all, before we get into that, how much have you written on this and what you guys have over at Jaguar Report? Tell everybody, you know, what they can kind of go find to read so far and then what to look out for if you've got more stuff planned.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the night the Jaguars fired Caldwell, I went ahead and did something where I did like 7 big name candidates who I think makes sense. Not 7 guys I'm advocating for because I had somebody – email me asking me why the hell I mentioned the former GM of the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm like, well, I'm just saying like guys I think, you know, makes sense. So you can go and look at that. A few of the guys I mentioned on there that I think make a lot of sense to the Jaguars. Tom Gamble, he's in the I don't even know if it's called the Canadian Football League anymore, but it's Canada and they play football. He was one of 3 guys I interviewed with the Jags in 2013, and he actually said no to a second interview with them so he could interview with the Jets, and he ended up not even getting that job. So I could see them maybe circling back to him because I know a lot of people inside the NFL look at him as like a really respected long-time personnel guy. He's an older guy, so he's more of like the experienced hire, the like maybe safer type, and that's – I kind of want to ask you guys this. What do you guys like want in a GM? Because when they hired Caldwell, I'm not even sure it was a bad hiring process because he had a decent resume. He just hadn't ever ran the show by himself. So, I mean, do you guys want somebody who's like similar to Caldwell, who's kind of a riser, or do you want somebody who's experienced?
Well, before we answer that, let's go back a second here, John. This guy that you just – what was his name? Gamble?
Tom, yeah.
Tom Gamble. So he's so good that he's in the CFL right now?
He was in the NFL until 2019. I think he just got burnt out and dipped. But, yeah, he's in the CFL.
Okay, great. Yeah, so that's our guy. We could just stop there.
I wasn't advocating for him. I'm just starting a dialogue.
I mean, I'll let Dilla and Solly answer that. I feel like I kind of did a little bit already. But so, I mean, what are you guys looking for?
I mean, for me personally, like you touched on earlier, like, I don't know what these guys know. And, like, I don't know how to, like, grade a candidate. So I'm just going to base my opinion off whatever John writes, because he's like one of the five people I read in town. So whatever he's saying, I'll probably say something similar. And if he's all about it, I'm going to be about it. And if he's not, I'm not going to be about it. But I just hope it works out, because I have no idea.
Solly, how about you, bud? Got anything more concrete than that?
Yeah, my answer is going to be exactly the same, but instead of just going with whatever John says, I'm going to go with whatever Demetrius says.
There you go.
I dig it.
That way you know you'll either be wrong or right.
And I know, like, we might jump into specifics, and Demetrius touched on it in an article since we're here. Is the baseball guy, Theo Epstein, is he going to get, like, a shot? Is this a legit thing? Like, he has a shot at being an NFL GM, or is that, like, completely out of left field and more of, like, a ha-ha, like, that's cool. He's an analytic guy, so, like, he could probably make it work. But
two things. As a Chicago Cubs fan, Epstein is super smart guy. I'm pretty sure that he would thrive in the NFL, just because he's not like your, like, old school baseball scout who, you know, like in Moneyball or whatever. Like, he's he's a good personnel guy. On the other hand, as a Cubs fan, if you want your team to look really good for 6 years and then just in the seventh year for them to just kind of put the franchise into the wood chipper kind of overnight, that's your guy. Yeah.
Okay. So we're hiring a baseball GM that's going to screw up the team. That sounds like
check this though. So no. It does sound like some Jaguar shit. But for those that aren't aware, he brought the first World Series championship to Boston in forever and Chicago forever. He's like a curse breaker. We kind of think we have something like that going on down at the stadium. And it just, I don't know. If there was ever a out of left field hire, on paper, I probably wouldn't like it, because I'd be like, bro, he's like not a football guy. But then again, I can see it, and like it's the Jacksonville Jaguars, and like if shit's nutty, it's like in, like starting Minshew and making, you know, stuff like that. So like, I mean, what do you think, Cap?
I'm gonna go on the record right now. On the record, fellas. And say that I would rather have Theo Epstein than Tom or Terry Gamble. Who was it? Tom. Tom Gamble, Chris Gamble, Ron Gamble, Bob Gamble. I'd rather have fucking Theo Epstein than any of the Gambles.
But we've got a ranking going. So we've got, is it Epstein?
Yeah.
I don't know about baseball. So we've got Epstein above Gamble so far. That's what we've got, right?
Yeah.
I like it.
I mean,
you know, you were looking for concrete rankings. Here we are. We're giving you guys what you want.
Well, if there's here's the thing. If there's anybody completely out of left field that's analytics and, you know,
he's kind of like swaggy for like a 45-year-old.
He's like the baseball Daryl Morey, right, whatever right, dude's right, name right. is. Yeah.
I mean, if there's anybody that's not coming from the NFL world, that's coming from completely outside of it, right? Mm-hmm. He would be the guy because of everything that Dilla just said. Like, he's the curse breaker. Anybody's going to get that shot and cross over from a different sport into the NFL, it would be.
So this guy is so legendary that he won the first Red Sox World Series in like 100 years, and then the first Cubs World Series in like 100 years. So his whole motivation to come to Jacksonville is like, I can win a Super Bowl in Jacksonville, Florida. Is that it? Because what else is bringing him here? That's what I want to know.
Man, the kismet.
Yeah, the money and the beaches and the bitches.
Is he making more money in the NFL than he is in the MLB?
I don't think money matters too much right now. But
yeah, he literally wants to.
He resigned from the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, bro. But what I'm saying is, like, he's got to be fucking mad loaded already, right?
Like, working in the NFL seems a lot more fun working in baseball. I mean, like, 116 games that you have to watch.
Oof. And building a roster from low A ball to the you know, your 40-man roster and then your 25-man active roster versus
what he's looking for is a cushy job where he just picks the right quarterback and then he's the curse breaker in Jacksonville.
You're on to something.
Taking all of Shot Khan's money.
Now Sari's light bulb is dinging.
You know, honestly, he wouldn't even be the first guy to make that kind of move. The Browns, they have whoever the hell Jonah Hill played in Moneyball, that dude that he portrayed works for the Browns right now. He's like their like second or third in command.
Yeah, well, the Browns are crazy wild. They took Sashi Brown from here, who was like the lead general counsel, and made him like the Sultan of football or whatever.
Yeah, like what was up with that? He did like inner city like living or something like that, like housing in Jacksonville. Sashi Brown.
No, he was like the general counsel for the Jaguars.
They also.
Well, I know, but before he. Yeah. Right. I'm saying he went from like doing like inner city stuff to Jacksonville to like a GM in like 6 years.
Yeah. Well, and that just all proves to you, right? That like most of these guys. I'm serious. First of all, the personnel world, front office world, personnel world in the NFL is extremely, extremely like incestuous, right? Like it's buddy system, it's nepotism, it's whatever you want to call it. It's hey, get in with this group of guys and get your shot, get your foot in the door, and you know, ride the wave when your organization starts doing well, and then everybody eats, right? Like that's very much what it is. And I'm not convinced that I'm seriously not convinced that there aren't people who are part of like draft Twitter that couldn't go in and do a comparable job to some of these guys who have just worked their way up.
Or a better job.
Yeah, started getting coffee, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and now it's their turn to get their shot because their team, you know, their organization just had a good run of a few years and picking players. Like,
I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles GM that won a Super Bowl, he picked like a 26-year-old guard from Baylor in the first round who moonlighted as a fireman. So, I mean, that just kind of shows you like the kind, like literally as he was playing in the NFL, dude was a fireman. So that just shows you the kind of decisions these dudes make sometimes.
Yep. Yeah. I think they get way too much credit. Right, they get way too much credit for wins and sometimes for losses. Like it's a weird world. I remember when they were hiring Caldwell, I was real into it, and I convinced myself that this guy was better than that guy, and better than that guy, and that guy. But in reality, man, I think I've just seen so much terrible shit that my eyes have now been opened. And again, it goes back to, can you pick the quarterback? And can you build it, right? Can you build it then? Can you build the organizational framework, the culture, and the roster? Can you do it? Mm-hmm. But first, we got to nail the motherfucking quarterback.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, go ahead, Dill. I mean, every team that, you know, we mentioned earlier, you know, the Pittsburghs, the Baltimores, the Kansas Cities, they've all had those answers at quarterbacks while they've had all this consistency and while they've drafted Pro Bowlers after Pro Bowlers. And that's not a coincidence. You know, I mean, if you clear that biggest hurdle, everything else comes so much easier.
And I think right now the difference in the GM search compared to when we were going to hire Caldwell. Sorry. Caldwell. We were coming out of like a couple rocky years, but there was some success before that. So, you know, you're still in the mind of like, all right, we can get this turned around and get back to where we were. But now we're into like 10, 12 years of like straight bullshit. So if the new guy comes in and he stinks, it's just more of the same. You know what I mean? So until the new guy, whoever it is, has some success, then that's when we're going to get bought back in. And then that's when, like what you're saying, Cap, like if he's half decent because they hit a quarterback, if they look like the Texans, if we have a Deshaun Watson and we're terrible otherwise, we're going to love him. At the end of the day, we're going to love him because, you know, minus this year, whatever, the Texans are always like right there in terms of like wild card, winning the division, whether that be because Tennessee and Indy are also like 500, 9-7 teams. But – they're always right there, and it's because they have a quarterback, and they fire their GM and their head coach.
Yep, and this is why I advocate, and I'm sure there'll be more time for me to do so over the course of the next few months. This is why I advocate going full Ditka. Go full fucking Ditka. Hire this new GM and let him give away every fucking pick, all 39 picks that we have this year, and the picks and some from next year, for all I give a shit. And just go get fucking Trevor Lawrence. See how dumb the Jets will be.
Like, a running back who loves weed?
I'm in. I'm fucking in. I'm in. Because I'm too many people are too many people are on the fucking Fields train, and it's scaring me now, and I'm not
even on the Fields train.
Or you're on the Zach Wilson train?
I'm not even on, I don't give a fuck train. I just don't think it fucking matters. Like,
I want the guy, Dilla. I want the guy.
No, see, and that's where you're missing the point. I don't think the drop-off in the first however many guys is going to be that big, because it never is. The first guy drafted this year was Joe Burrow, and who is the best quarterback of the rookies this year playing before Burrow got hurt? It's the fucking Jake surfer Luke. Stoner. Jake get Luke. Out there and wherever Jake Los Luke. Angeles. Exactly. Luke. Herbert. It's Herbert. Herbert's the best quarterback from the class right now.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if there's any year for the Jaguars to be this bad and get the number two pick and even have a chance to get the number one pick, this is the best year. You know, I mean, when they picked Bortles, they were always going to go quarterback that year. There were two starting quarterbacks that came out of that draft, but neither one of them were stars, you know. That's an awful quarterback draft. They were kind of screwed going into it. I think this is a way more positive situation, because I think all three of the top guys, you can probably – talk me into being, you know, really good to even potentially, you know, top 12, top 13 type guys.
And that's where I'm at. And that's why I don't want to move the assets. And that's why, like, I'm saying I don't give a fuck. Like, I don't want to move the assets of the later first round pick and the second round pick and the other second round pick, because we stink on defense. So look at what Dak Prescott was doing in Dallas, scoring 40 points a game and losing. Like, at some point, even with a good quarterback, you can keep shaking your head. No, I see you.
I'm in. Score 40 points and lose and have Dak Prescott? Where the fuck do I sign up? I'm in.
Oh, I would take that too if we're going to side note. We can just trade away all of our picks and we can pay for Dak Prescott. But no, back to what I'm saying. Like, I just think if we get one of the top three guys, I don't care which one it is. I genuinely don't care. If we're picking first, they better take Lawrence. Like, if he's there, I should say. If Lawrence is there when they pick and they don't take him,
okay. So let's back up. But let's back up then. So you keep saying that. Like, do you not think that there is a gap between Lawrence and Fields or Wilson or any of the other guys?
Yeah, I do. I think it's like this big. So I'm going to take the one that I think is for sure the best. And then after that, I don't care who it is between Wilson and Fields.
That was bad radio. Nobody could see how big on the podcast.
I'm sorry.
He was holding up his fingers about the height of Lenny Curry.
Got him. We didn't even write that in, folks. That was all ad lib.
This episode of The Bold Take is brought to you by A1 Sliders, sliding glass door and window repair. I like to think of my sliding glass door on the back of my house as like an airplane, right? It needs to land perfectly and smoothly in the little groove, aka the runway, for proper functionality. If yours isn't, you need to head over to a1sliders.com or give them a call, 386-538-6835, for a free estimate of how to get your airplane landing perfectly on your runway. Again, a1sliders.com, 386-538-6835. Give them a call and get that airplane landing smoothly right on that runway. Now back to the bold take.
So, now, Shipley, all right. So, I don't know if we were going to go the quarterback route, because there'll be plenty of time for all of us to dissect this ad nauseum. But just give me your opinion, Shipley. Like, I see Lawrence as the expert quarterback evaluator that I am, who thought Dwayne Haskins was going to be really good.
Yeah, same.
I see Lawrence as kind of that next guy, the next Andrew Luck, sort of. I can't see what, and I've talked about this on the podcast.
always hurt and never won anything.
You get the unicorn shit. That would be the best quarterback to ever play for fucking Jaguars by a mile. But you get the unicorn quarterback every 8 to 12, 15 years, whatever. And by the unicorn, I mean, you can't point to many holes in the game, in his game, number one. Number two, he's got the track record of playing a lot of games and playing in, you know, relative pro-style type offense, right? So you've got all those things. And then he's also won, right? And he's proven that he can win and that he's a competitor at the highest level. So that's why I'm such a strong advocate for trying to get him. Now, chances are we probably aren't the way it's going to shake out. But I just kind of want your take, like, because I'm seeing some people throw some really flagrant stuff out there, like Justin Fields is a better, you know, is a better prospect than Trevor Lawrence, and I can't figure out for the life of me how somebody can make an objective call like that with just based off of what we've seen so far. So give me your take on what that gap is, if there is one, if there isn't, with Lawrence.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm a really big Justin Fields fan. You know, I've never made that any secret. I was a fan of his at Georgia when they were using him like LaVisca Chenault and, you know, running him out of the Wildcat. But I agree with you. I think there is an actual, like, a, you know, a discernible gap between the two. I think the big thing is, you know, we've seen Lawrence do it for 3 years now, almost to the point where I think maybe people are kind of getting bored of seeing him do so well for, you know, so often for as long as he has. And meanwhile, with Fields, we've seen him do it for a year and a half, you know. He's had a lot of success, but there's just a bigger sample size with Lawrence. There's a bigger sample size of him winning and playing in big games. He's won in different ways. And what I think is most importantly is he's won with, like, three completely different sets of skill players, you know. He's had different NFL quality receivers at each stage of his career, but he's played with different types of guys, you know. He had T. Higgins last year. Now he has, I can't remember his name, but dude's like a burning slot receiver. And they couldn't be more different, but he's able to adapt to that. And I just think he's the kind of quarterback who he'll be able to adapt to any situation that he gets thrown in, and whatever a defense gives him, he at least has the ability to have an answer for it. And I think Fields is really talented, but I think at this point, I'm with you. I think there's enough of a gap to say Lawrence is the more of a sure thing. And if the Jets were willing to do something like, you know, accept like an RG3 type deal, I wouldn't even say the Jaguars would be foolish to do it. I mean, the best quarterback you've had in the last decade is Blake Bortles or Gardner Minshew. I mean, I get it. Sell the farm. I get it.
Yeah. Dilla walked away there. He didn't hear all your brilliant takes, but I agree with you.
I agree with him too, because if John said it, it's right.
That's right. That's most of the time. Yeah. So you just told us that you're a really, really big Fields fan. Again, who knows? We may have you on for the fourth time before the draft, but, like, can you – this is what Jaguar fans are talking about right now, right? They're talking about the GM, the inevitable, who the head coach will probably be, and all the coordinators and all that shit, and then who the quarterback's going to be, right? Like, that's what people are
– Wait, there's no chance of Marone being back?
Shut up, Solly. This is fucking real talk right here.
I was going to say, it's been hard for me. Like, normally the day after games, even with the Jaguars on their big loss, I'll do a couple of different stories about the game the previous day. And this week I was just like – you know, like, what's the point? And then even looking forward to the Vikings game, I'm just kind of like, I feel like everybody's just kind of ready to move past these next five games and to get into the big decisions, because the GM and the quarterback and the head coach, those are the things that really matter, you know, not these next 5 weeks.
There's literally nothing that's going to happen in these games that really matters, man. I mean,
unless they win.
I was going to say that Mike Glennon's going to roll off a 3-game win streak. They're going to draft Kyle Pitts at number 8.
I've got a good idea for you for an article. It could just be a poll, and you'll get hella clicks and engagement. So
easy click on engagement, captain. Bottom,
you know, attribute it to me or whatever. But
of course,
you could run a poll that says, "Were you or were you not totally surprised to find out that Mike Glennon was married?" Right, like that's what the poll could be. Because that's what I took away from that fucking game last week. They kept showing his wife and his, you know, and his two like beautiful, adorable children. And I'm just like, I don't know why, but it just blew my mind. Like I
he doesn't seem that old. He doesn't seem old enough for all that.
Well, that, and I mean, he just has like a 7 foot neck, and I didn't know. Like I just, I mean, not that he's a hideous looking human being, but I don't know. I like when they showed it, it completely took me off guard, even more than the taking off of the extra point, literally taking points off the board. Like the, that's what I came away from that game with. So
didn't he sign like a $45 million contract one year?
Yeah, with Chicago.
Yep.
I have a take.
Okay.
Mike Glennon is cool. Yeah, I would have never had said it otherwise, but the last two times dude has talked, he's basically said, I'm in, you know, I don't give a damn mode. We're 1-9. I don't know if I'm ever going to play again, so I'm just going to throw the ball all over the field. We'll see what happens. And I'm like, I respect it, too. I'm for it, man. They're 1-9. This is your, like, third – this is, like, your fifth team. Chuck it all over the place. It's refreshing to hear somebody just openly be like, yeah, we suck. I'm gonna go
fuck it. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's why, like, even though there were moments in that game where we're like, shit, this dude might do it. We might win. Everybody was still kind of like, I didn't see too much hate for him on the timeline. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Like, yeah. I kind of feel like YOLO Glennon is basically the common man, right? Like Chicago handed, he got drafted in the NFL, dream come true. Chicago handed him 45 mil. He found himself a little Philly. They got married, made a couple offspring. I mean, he is the everyday man. Now he's just like, fuck it. I got my money. I got the lady. And I don't know if I'll ever get a chance to fucking play in an NFL game again. So these dumb motherfuckers want to trot me out there. YOLO. Right, like that's yeah. it.
I mean, he was a late addition to the roster. It's not like he was like hanging out.
No, he was
signed in like May or something.
He
was backing up a 6th round quarterback, and then he got skipped over to have another 6th round quarterback play in front of him.
Yeah, dude.
I think we owe it to this guy to bring him in as the backup next year.
And I know, like, we didn't really get to talk about it that much, but can we all just agree that Jake Luton's he stinks? He's just terrible.
Who?
I think he might be the long-term answer. Just got to let him develop. That's all.
All right, cool. Jim,
you got a comp for Justin Fields since you're a big Fields fan?
For Fields, man. I kind of want to say Dak, honestly.
That's what I think, too.
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of how they can throw it with either, you know, they can fit it in there like a super tight window, or they have the really nice touch throws. And if there's anything that you're going to kind of be frustrated by him, it's sometimes, I guess, he can be a little slower getting off a read or whatever, or just trying to force it. And when I watch him, he just reminds me so much of Dak. And to me, Dak's, you know, one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. If you get a guy like that with a top pick, I think you're more than happy.
Hell yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. Wilson is the one I don't really know a comp for. Like I know a ton of people say Mahomes, but I don't think you can compare anybody to Mahomes, no matter how, you know, crazy their highlights are. So he's the one that's tough for me to put a finger on. I just know that he's good.
I'm really excited that they like picked up that game against Coastal Carolina on Saturday. Yes, he's actually a really, really good football team. So I'm excited to watch that and base all of my takes for the rest of the offseason on that one game that I watched. So, again, guys, when you see me talking quarterbacks and you ask me who I want, just look at the bio. It's in there.
Did you see what the Coastal Carolina coach said?
No, I didn't.
Somebody asked him, though, like, is it tough to prepare to play a game in 2 days? And he's like, well, we're praying pretty hard, but I know they are too. They're Mormons or something like that.
This is Carolina by 2 scores. I like it. Awesome. So Trey Lance is really kind of the wild card, though, huh? Like, I mean, talk about a guy who, like, somebody may pick him 9th or 10th overall, and he could end up being fucking, you know, a superstar or not.
He's the dude who, like, you sign Matt Stafford – and you say you're going to sit Trey Lance for a year, and then Stafford breaks down on, like, week 5, and Lance comes in and, like, plays pretty well. I don't think Lance is bad at all. I think he's behind those three. But if you're going to be, like, the 4th best quarterback, he's, like, probably the best number 4 quarterback of a draft class, like, you could possibly, like, want.
Yeah.
Yeah, his tools are just insane. Like, his athletic ability, and he has an absolute rocket of an arm.
I think you went to the same school as Gus Bradley, though.
He did, North Dakota.
Yeah, so you're bringing that to the quarterback position.
Well, and Carson Wentz, yep, love it.
Shout out to Georgia and Minnesota.
My goodness. all right, well.
What are two states that Trump is. Lost?
Oh, boy. Gus Bradley. Oh, by the way, how about Daniel Jeremiah tweeting out like his checklist of all the things he'd look for in a head coach? And I couldn't resist, man. I had to quote tweet it and be like, my guy right here just completely described Gus fucking Bradley. Like, you got to go back to the drawing board now. Like, there's no, what? Oh, stop. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. You need a new phone, by the way.
It stinks.
But yeah, no, like he literally. Stop it. This is terrible. No, we're podcasting right
bad
now.
Bad radio, but we're all laughing at a tweet that entered the timeline.
Anyway, yeah, I just, I don't know. These guys, they're all full of shit. Everybody wants Daniel Jeremiah. I don't fucking want him.
I saw
somebody say Lewis Riddick, and I fucking ran the other way.
No, man. I specifically remember being on Twitter in 2016 and Lewis Riddick saying, I think Eli Apple is a better cornerback prospect than Jalen Ramsey. And I'm like, I don't care how much his mom might have harassed you on Twitter or voicemails or anything. There is no way you can say Eli Apple is better than Jalen Ramsey at anything, even back then. And I saw a tweet, I think it was on Monday Night Football. I can't remember the agent's name, but it's some like high-profile agent. And somebody had he had said something about Lewis Riddick, and then somebody tweeted at him, you think he's a legit GM candidate? And the agent, like, just blatantly on Twitter in front of everybody was like, whoever hires him is going to be drafting high for the next 5 years and will be hiring a new GM soon. And I'm like, damn, dude.
Wow. Oh, so really that's honest, who we're hiring. All right, we got
been,
it.
Must have been Jalen's agent.
Cap, would you put him? Would you put him? Where would you put him? You've got Epstein 1, you've got Tom Gamble 2.
What are you on about right now? What are you on about?
Epstein 1 and Tom Gamble 2. So where are you putting Lewis Riddick on this list?
I think it's fantastic that you, for the first time in your life, you know actually know who Theo Epstein is now. So like that's what I'm happy about that I come away from this podcast with. That's my answer.
I've heard the name.
Yeah, I've heard the name. I'm familiar. you know, Shipley, if you had, and I know you're probably going to write a bunch more about it and we'll eventually find out how it all shakes out. Do you have, I know you kind of asked us what we're looking for in a GM.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of maybe wrap everything up with this here. Do you have one to two or three guys that you think should be who they're looking at and kind of why?
Yeah, for sure. You know, like you said, I'll be writing more on this. You guys can look on Jaguar Report the next few days. I'm actually going to be doing something based off different conversations with people I'm having, you know, kind of out in the football world on one personnel executive from each team to maybe keep an eye on, splitting it in NFC and AFC. But if I had to narrow it down to three guys, I'd probably say Ed Dodds with the Colts. I have no idea if the Colts would actually allow him to come here because – I don't think there's actually any written rules for NFL, like, people rejecting jobs. It's just – they just do it. Like, I remember Ron Wolf a couple of years ago Ted Thompson blocked Elliot Wolf from, like, interviewing for the general manager's job but like, without even asking him. And I saw something, and I was like, well, technically, he there's not a rule that says he can or can't do that. It's just kind of murky. So, I have no idea if the Colts would allow him, but I've heard Ed Dodds. He's Chris Ballard's, like, right-hand man. He has experience scouting college and the pros, and he's supposed to be somebody who I think the number one trait that the Jags need to look for in a general manager is somebody that holds people, including himself, accountable. Because I think that's probably the biggest issue in the organization over the last 8 years. They've held nobody accountable, including, you know, themselves at a lot of steps. So I think just that and realizing mistakes and realizing when to move on is a big thing. And then other than that, I think Elliot Wolf, he's currently a consultant. He's worked with a couple different teams this year. He's a consultant with the Patriots right now. He's a Ron Wolf's son. Ron Wolf was the GM. He, you know, got Favre, kind of built those Packers teams. And then Elliot Wolf worked with the Packers for all of Rodgers' prime years. went to the Browns a couple of years ago. I actually did a really good job there as their assistant GM, but kind of hitched his wagon to John Dorsey, and that ended up miserably. So he's just kind of out in the wind now. And then the last guy would be Mike. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his name because I just know I'd absolutely butcher it. It's Mike, starts with a B and ends with like Z-I. So go ahead and Google it.
I think it's
it.
Gorgonzi, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't
that yeah. Correct? Yeah. He works for the Chiefs, and dude has like worked like seven different jobs in their scouting department since 2009. And the thing that I think makes him such a cool candidate is he has worked for three different general managers and inside an organization that has had a couple different dudes go on to be general managers elsewhere, you know, like Chris Ballard, that I just think getting somebody who has seen like it work in multiple different ways and is willing to adapt, I think that's really big. So I would say like accountability, being able to adapt, and just having a strong pedigree in your decisions.
Boom.
That's a home run answer. That's something yeah. I would never have been able to come up with, and that's why you're here, and that's why all my opinions go through John Shipley.
I'd love to tell you it was like really thought out and I had it prepared, but that was kind of just off the dome.
Well, this is what you're doing now, bro. This is your life. The life you're living is GM talk until that turns into head coach talk, until that turns into coordinator talk, and then until that turns into
quarterback
talk. And then, you know, from there we just prosper.
It seriously hit me what kind of career I had gotten in when I had spent like a week talking about Ben McAdoo coaching Gardner Minshew in like March. So I've accepted that.
There's a lot worse shit that you could be doing, my man. A lot worse shit, trust me. Fair. Yeah. Anyway, anything else, fellas? What do we got? Anything? Sally, what's on the list?
That's it, man.
Look at the flick of the list.
Oh, boom. This is the most awake Dill has been at the end of a podcast in a long time.
I'm not complaining, but I've got to say I'm a little surprised no Gauntlet this time.
Well, you know, we've never – you are a – I don't know if you know this, John, but you are a third-time guest. And we've never actually put people through multiple gauntlets. It's kind of hard because a lot of the material kind of gets used up in the original gauntlet.
Well, so. The thing is, you're so damn good at putting together the gauntlet too that it's just like a complete thing when you do it. You know what I mean? Like, there's no adding on to something that's so complete.
That's right. That's true.
Yeah, good point.
It's like you can't unbake a cake. Once it's made, it's made.
That's right. Fucking cake, man.
I like that. Solly said it with words, and then Dilla got all metaphorical. I like it. That's good. Well, Shipley, we appreciate you coming on, man. I think that last answer you gave was probably worth the click and the listen, which is clearly why we kept it last. We're going to make people listen to the whole podcast to get that juicy nugget. But we appreciate you coming on again, bud, and we may have you on again in the future as
fourth time. Guys, thanks for having me on. And I mean, I just want to say while I got you guys here, you know, in like the 15, 16 months I've been covering the Jags, you guys especially, but really the entire Jags fan base, like you guys are one I can't imagine a better fan base to write for, because just not only like the supporting the content, but the dialogue every day. You guys are fun to talk to. You know, it's not like I'm talking to, you know, a bunch of brick walls. So I just want to thank you guys for not only supporting what I've been doing, but for, you know, for the entire Jags fan base, really, for, you know, being somebody that's like actually enjoyable to kind of talk to each day, you know, on the internet.
Oh yeah, I feel the same way, dude.
Yeah, for sure. We big, you know, that long been big fans of yours through different publications and different pen names. Long been big fans, and just the content that you guys are putting out. I'll end the episode with this. At Jaguar Report, it's the SI affiliated, right? Formerly Maven, or maybe still Maven. I don't know. No, who knows? But
John's not in charge of these decisions. It's a different tax bracket.
Man, let me tell you, like it has been, you know, it's funny how things work, because I still am subscribed to The Athletic mainly because of other, you know, or obviously because of other writers for other sports teams that I follow, certainly not for the Jags. But it's funny how you have come in this new umbrella under SI with Jaguar Report, and kind of been exactly what I was hoping I would get with my athletic situation. You know what I mean? Like, so in a weird way, it almost makes me less pissed off at the athletic because at least I have something, right? Like, at least I have it. So
you could just cancel your athletic subscription and just funnel that money to John on the side.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, I think it's the best idea Sauce had all night.
And that's the thing, though, too. The everyone at the Jaguar Port, I mean, it's John, Cassidy, Gus. How many people you got there? I mean,
yeah, no, it's just us three.
So the three of them literally crank out so much content that I'm sometimes surprised by how quality it is because it's so much one after another, and it's literally like, oh shit, I want to read that. Oh shit, I want to read that too. So it's really cool to see, like, literally you guys are just taking it and running with it. And I appreciate it because it's stuff I like to read about.
For sure. And a shout out, by the way, too, to Cassidy because
She's awesome. She's awesome.
She is. And she's turning out some different, like, kind of, you know, I think she's kind of got her niche there almost. And, like, I think the latest example was that Ocho Cinco, Chad Johnson, quick little interview that she got, and
yeah, she literally just walked up from her seat and went and found him in the press box, and I'm like, Cassidy, that's what makes you, like, so good, because I know a lot of people, you know, like, wouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I mean, you know, everybody that works in local sports media knew Chad Johnson was in town, and you guys were the ones who kind of took the initiative and went down there. I mean, by the way, like, pretty sure Chad Johnson would have talked to Gene Fournette, even freaking Gene Fournette, if Gene walked down there, right? Like, I mean, that's just who Ocho Cinco is. Like, he's a dude who loves talking to people. So, you know, anyway, just the latest example. Want to give her shout out, props to you guys are doing a great thing, and we appreciate the content. What's been a fucking
thanks, man. Appreciate y'all. Like I said, appreciate Jaguars fan base in general. I mean, for all the things people have ever said nationally about Jaguars fans, I can't think of a better fan base, like I said, to, you know, be allowed to write for every day.
Well, hopefully you and the team over there at the Jaguar Report and then all of us Jaguar fans have a different type of dialogue going forward. Here's to that, man.
Yeah.
In years to come. So I think that's it, fellas.
Love you, JD.
Yeah, I was going to say, John, you probably remember what we do here. You are a three-time guest, so.
Love you, JB. Night, buddy.
Oh. Love you, JB.
Love you, JB.
That's it.
Love you, JB. Your freedom. Well, who am I?
visions to myself. It's all in me, the walls to wrap around your dreams and have you any dreams you like to sell? Dreams of loneliness like a heartbeat pass you back in the stillness of a memory. What you hang on to and what you love.
Dude, Elf on the Shelf fucking sucks.
Yeah, Elf on the Shelf sucks. That's a real I have kids take. So I just want you to know that. This motherfucker said Elf on the Shelf sucks. All I know is people fiend over that shit. And when I see it.
We're just putting them up right now.
Do you do it?
Callie just got her own this year.
Yeah.
I will tell you, Sally, the one good thing about those fucking things. The one good thing is you legit get to hold them over your kid. Like, you get to be like, yo, bear, like, so Jackson's name is, his elf is Louie.
Mm-hmm.
We got a solid 3 or 4 years.
This is the shit I'm talking about right here.
What? What?
This explanation that you're going into right now makes me want to shoot myself in the face.
No. Well, you know what'll make you want to shoot yourself in the face? When both those little fucking gremlins that you have that you created are talking back and not fucking listening, yeah. That will make you want to shoot yourself in your face. You're not there yet. Believe me, you'll be there.
I've gotten a little taste.
You can turn around, you can look at the little fucker and be like, Louie's watching. And these fucking kids, they want Louie to come back so bad the next day that they will fucking straighten up. Louis watching.
I'm just using Louis. Santa for that. Back in my day, Santa worked just fine. I didn't have to put up a fucking phone. No.
Here's what you don't fucking understand. Back in your day, you didn't get to hold a fucking iPad and have this
Google
interaction all the time. These kids, if it's not there, they don't fucking believe it. I'm telling you.
It's these smart little fucks.
I'm telling you.
It makes me mad.
Dude, if I had an iPad at age 8, I would literally type in this in a reel. Like, I would have, like, cooked myself. Like, what?
Yep.
Oh, it's real, though. That's, like, legit what happens, yeah.
No, they don't type anything in. He holds down the fucking button and says, Siri, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I'm like, Jackson, why? We were talking about something that he was learning in school. I'm like, why don't you just go Google what that is? And he goes, Google.
How old are you, Dad?
What do you mean, go Google? I'm like, get the iPad, open up the browser, type it. He's like, what? I mean,
that's Siri to tell me that shit, Dad.
Yeah. And that's why, like, him and I had this talk the other day, too, about, because about, you know, he's got math, he's got reading and, you know, English and whatnot in school in fourth grade now. And I'm like, look, man, math is bullshit. Okay. When I was your age, I'm serious. I'm like, when I was your age, my teacher used to always say, you're never going to have, a, you know, I'd be like, I can figure this out with a calculator. What do I need to like, well, someday, you know, you're not going to always have a calculator. And I'm like, so I'm telling Jackson this and I'm like, well, guess what, buddy? We're all going to have calculators till the day we
calculator
die, right here in our fucking hand. So, you
and
know,
Siri.
No, I said, look, what's more important than the math shit is reading and writing, because you have to be a good communicator in life. I said, you don't want to be the guy who's typing a 3-paragraph thing on Facebook that you're trying to sound really smart, but every time you type the word woman, you're doing W-O-M-E-N. Like that, you don't want to be that fucking guy, all right? These are life lessons.
Bro, I feel that. I mean, I work with a bunch of like handymen, like old guys, and it's not good. They're there and there. Your is brutal.
Oh, yeah. You work with Lenny Curry?
2-2-2. Dude, shout out to everybody who's against Lenny Curry. It's good to see some unity on the timeline.
Yeah.
Because it's everybody.
Here you go again, you say you want your freedom. Well, who will I keep you down?
There's your lead in, Zolly.
I took a video of it real quick.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, what a ride.
Yes. I pulled that up last when I saw you walk in with that though. Oh my goodness. By the way though, that song fucking slaps.
Oh no, it's so fire. It's
fuck
so
yeah.
Fire.
Yeah.
Like it shouldn't have took a TikTok to get it, you know, to get popping again.
Yeah.
So Melissa is not like she is Pinterest, Facebook, Instagram, like and doesn't really ever pay attention to anything that goes viral, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she's one of the last people to really know about it, you know, for better or worse. So we were up in Savannah, and she was drinking this we were at this brewery, and she was drinking this sour, and I look over, and because she liked it, so I looked over in their fridge, and they had it. I'll go grab one in a minute, because they brought it back home. But it's a painted label of that guy. With the cranberry juice, because it was like it was a sour that had like cranberry in it, and I said to her, I'm like, oh my god, that's amazing! Like, look at that, it's the dude from TikTok that went viral with the cranberry. She had no clue. Like I was like, it was like explaining to someone like who had just seen like water before. I was like, like, and then I pulled up video, like the video, and like just like she's like, I've never heard of this.
When you explain these things to her, does she act like you're a fucking idiot? Because that's what my wife does.
No, she was getting frustrated with me because I was like, there's no way you haven't seen this.
Yeah.
Like he's even been on like the Today Show. You watch the Today Show. Like, how have you not seen me?
How does he not have his own fucking Pinterest board? Is that how that shit works?
Oh, no. But I was thinking, like, even like Instagram, like everything. And then I showed her how the dude from Fleetwood Mac, like, you know, they met up and you know, like he got his own video. And
you missed all this, babe.
I think Ocean Spray bought him a car or something like that.
Yeah, new truck. Yeah.
That's insane, man.
Well, and then she was like, well, why? Like, what? They bought him a truck? Like, for doing the video? I'm like, baby, got like...
Did you not see the video?
Got like millions of dollars of, you know, of...
Free ad money.
Advertising, yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Now, like, Dilla's about to get it. For dome hats, Ocean Spray, and for Ricky Carroll surfboards.